EFT.
This hour of programming is brought to you by the Urbana Park District and the listeners of WEFT. Urbana Park District facilities are open, and the Park District is slowly restarting its programs. Please visit www.urbanaparks.org for more information. Due to the risk to our volunteers and the uncertainty of our local economy, WEFT chose to cancel our spring pledge drive. As we move forward through this time of great and hopeful change, we encourage you to take this opportunity to renew your WEFT membership or contribute for the first time. Please consider participation in our efforts to remain a viable, strong, and independent forum for inspiration, education, and entertainment. Please visit our website, weft.org/support, and contribute what you're able, either a one-time contribution or as a sustaining member. Your support allows us to make continued investments in the programming you count on. Again, that website is weft.org/support. Thanks in advance for your generosity.
This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champagne 90.1 on your FM dial, and this is August the 30th, one more day in August. Time goes and the virus goes, and we've been learning things with virus. I have to give credit to WEFT for doing remote with their programs. They've tried very hard to keep faith with the virus. And I have with me, and he's organizing it because he's key to all this, is Jason Liggett, and he's in charge of the public television. And we've been having some Zoom meetings, which are not the world's greatest, but they're much better than nothing at all. We can talk to each other, see each other, and make comments. So WEFT is thinking of a virtual WEFT Fest, that we usually have a WEFT Fest in the street, can't do it this year. Can we do something? So there are the people who would like to do that, but there are the people who don't quite know how to do that. So Jason and Mike and others have been debating how to do this. So I'd like, you folk are listening to us are slightly different from the music people who listen at a different time. So we're giving you an opportunity to look at this process. It's not the easiest. It is. We need people who do this sort of work, and so what you're doing is watching us to see that what we do and what we might be able to do, and you're also watching us to see how you might get training to do this. And sometimes, if you're in a key position as a CEO, this could be a very important skill. So you out there might have programs that you want to do too. So listen to this well and see how we go. So, Jason, can you say something about the sort of a summary of the meeting we had on Zoom the other night? Would be good. What questions you start to ask? Nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely. So you did a good job of kind of setting it up in the fact that since we're currently social distancing and in a pandemic, we can't have WEFT Fest as we would normally have it there in the beer garden and out in the street right next to WEFT on Market Street. So we start looking, how else can we celebrate what WEFT offers, as well as this is part of WEFT's fun drive as well for their fall fun drive. So we started talking and tossing around ideas, and although people at WEFT had some and on the financial committee, and then they reached out to Todd Hunter, who is the host of WEFT Sessions, which is a show every Monday night featuring live local music, as well as Mike Feldman and myself. I run cameras for that show, as time allows, I should say, but certainly assist in getting the cameras at least in the building for someone to run. And then Mike Feldman is the audio wizard behind it all and makes all the musicians sound good on the air. So part of the finance committee approached us wanting to know what we thought of the idea of kind of having a best of WEFT sessions for WEFT Fest this year. And that kind of morphed itself into, you know, since it is WEFT Fest, let's kind of pick and choose performances from past WEF Fests, and Mike Feldman has done a good job of documenting all those in both audio and video, to where we can, he's working on digging back through those archives. And these are things that we kind of sorted out during our meeting earlier this week, and that we hope to have everything in place. WEF Fest will occur virtually on, we're still deciding the medium, but either YouTube or Facebook, or sharing it on Facebook. But then also it'll, of course, be broadcast on 90.1 FM WEFT on Sunday, September 20th, that afternoon. So we're still sorting out all the details, but certainly Zoom is going to be involved, as it seems like it's involved in so much. I think we can go back 6 months and nobody knew what Zoom was. And now it's like, oh yeah, Zoom, it's so much a part of what everybody does on a daily basis. And we're fortunate to, in this community, to have the technology. One thing that I've always talked about when I've gone to conferences is not everyone has the powerful internet that we have here in Champaign-Urbana. If you go up to, you know, even rural areas around central Illinois, but even some more established communities up in Wisconsin, when I go to these conferences, they're thinking, oh, how can we stream?
I go to some meetings where the person who is doing the videography is carrying one of those 25-pound video cameras that really is very heavy. I pick them up out of a suitcase, and there's a weight to those. Now you have a tiny little camera, and you can do all sorts of things with them. We're also encouraging you that are out there that happen to be around for a while, might have some fun video or still photographs or papers that might be interesting to the general public. You know, WEFT is getting to be nearly 40 years old. Next year we'll be 40. And so listen to us and try to figure out what you might do with your organization, but what you might contribute to WEFT. But you have to do it quickly because there's a deadline, and it's only like 3 weeks. How do you do this in 3 weeks? I haven't edited enough video to know that it takes a lot of time. And you have to know how to cut and shape and put and fix and broadcast, and there's a lot to it. So we're encouraging you out there to do some of this. One of the things that I worry about some in the background of this is how you can get knowledge as to how you do this. You've been to Parkland, and I think you might say something about the Parkland course, and you don't necessarily have to have a degree to do this. I have friends that have not gotten a degree, and their parents have been professorial people, and they've ended up with a very interesting and exciting position, and actually be more financial than the parents. So we're looking for CEO type people who can put together a lot of different ideas. So Jason, give us a few more ideas of how you put this together.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that I did attend Parkland College quite a few years ago now, but I'm very familiar with their program. And we get a number of part-time employees over at the City of Urbana, Urbana Public Television, from the Parkland College program, as well as interns throughout the semesters and throughout the years. But I went through that program, learned radio, TV, and video, and then started working part-time at a commercial radio station in town and part-time at UPTV, at the TV station I work now, and have kind of worked my way up at the City of Urbana and Urbana Public Television to station manager, where I am now. One of the things, you know, you kind of touched on a little bit is, you know, you see people with these huge cameras, and, you know, they still provide very good quality and everything like that, to where it's a larger, a better quality than you might see with someone with their iPhone. But the nice thing is even if you don't go through the formal training, video is such a natural part of many people's day-to-day lives, especially now. But even before the pandemic, even before we had to be socially distant, people were already experimenting with videos. Almost everyone has a camera in their pocket, in their cell phone now, and people are scrolling through Facebook. And, you know, when Facebook first started, it was just people saying what they were doing that day or things like that. And now there's all sorts of video on Facebook, and there's other social media that people are a part of. But going back to WEFFest, which is going to be on 90.1 FM on Sunday, September 20th, and we'll have a virtual component as well. One other aspect that we wanted to tie in, besides just going back to past performances of previous year's WEFFests, is to invite some of the WEFFies on. And so we're going to, keeping our fingers crossed that you mentioned that there's quite a bit of work to do in the next few weeks, but keeping our fingers crossed that we can have some of the WEFFies and past hosts and current hosts and everybody on just to talk about their experience with WEFFed, kind of do an introduction and to the bands that are coming up and performances that maybe they just heard. I think that'll be another interesting aspect of that, especially since we're going back to, there's a little bit of nostalgia there, right? People always like to remember from years past and say, oh yeah, I remember that. Where many people, this is a very transient community in Champaign-Urbana, they've moved on, right? They were at WEFFed maybe 10 or 15 years ago and were a prominent host and prominent in all the operations of WEFFed for, you know, a few years there. And then they've moved on to other communities doing other things. And then we'll have people that have been there for years, like yourself. You know, you've been around WEFFed for as long
as... A little while.
yeah, quite a while. And some people that are very involved, you know, board members, obviously, and associates and things of that nature. So I think, you know, if everything goes off how we want it to, it'll be a very enlightening and informative and entertaining program on the 20th.
It may not be without a lip or two. So don't get scared that if you do some of this, that you have to be on top of it all the time. This is community nonprofit radio and with some television, and that there are different buttons and different glitches that you can make at any one time. So you just have to have a sense of humor and carry on. And as you get to do more of it, you'll get to be a little bit more smooth. And it is important. Everyone can take their cell phone picture, but a really good television program is well programmed. Its clips are not too long or too short. We still need quality programming, and that's what comes out of this sort of a discussion. You have five or six people. There's Ed Hadley with a noise program, so you have to figure out whether noise is what you're going to want or what noise, and does it have character? Well, perhaps yes. If you bang on a box, is that okay? So yes. One thing that I wonder about is that in future, when WEFFed is going to be 40, I think a lot of our media is visual, and I would love to see WEFFed have a visual side to its character. Whether you might have some comment to say about that, because you're picking up not only Urbana not-for-profit groups and interesting events, but you're also servicing a lot of similar agencies in Champaign. And how do we do that? And how do we fund that sort of thing? It's not easy. So you may have a comment there.
Yeah, well, you certainly already touched on it, that financially it's a struggle, right? Many nonprofits over the years, they all provide a very good service to the community, and WEFFed is no different from that. But we need to make sure that WEFFed is supported from the community and by the listeners to where it can continue. If people are watching the video version of this, they're obviously probably fairly familiar with Urbana Public Television. You mention us regularly on your show, but in case anyone's just tuning in, going through the dial and lands on 90.1, much as WEFFed is a community radio station where members of the community can host their own radio show on a variety of topics and play music from a variety of genres that's not played on more commercial stations in town. Urbana Public Television is a community access television station. So anyone can come in and make their own TV show about whatever they want, and we help them do that. There's a couple different funding models when comparing WEF to comparing UPTV. The equipment at UPTV and other PEG channels around the nation is actually funded by what's called a PEG fee, PEG meaning public education and government, which is what our programming is based on, public education government access programming. So how it works in Urbana is a certain percentage of everyone's Comcast, i3 broadband, or AT&T U-verse bill goes back to UPTV to fund the equipment. It funds the computers that, you know, we edit with. It funds the broadcast server that keeps us going out on those cable channels. But, you know, a good scenario is it's 2%. So if someone is paying $100 for Comcast television, and it's always important for me to say television because now some people have cut the cord and they just get internet, right? Well, if you have Comcast Xfinity internet or any of the other providers' internet, the UPTV in the city doesn't see any money from that, but we see money from your cable television bill. So if you pay $100 in cable television fees in Urbana, $2 of that every month would go back to UPTV, so we're able to upgrade our equipment and things of that nature. And then as far as staffing at UPTV, that's a service provided by the city of Urbana. So our staffing levels comes from the city's general fund. And obviously WEFT is funded completely different from that, more in the sense of a traditional nonprofit. There's membership fees. There's obviously they have the pledge drive that's coming up on WEFT to where it's very much listener supported community radio. And that's why it's so important for listeners to support us, to support WEFT, not just by tuning in every week and enjoying the program, but also if they're able to support them financially, and they can become a member as well and support them in those ways as well. And there's also some grants from time to time that WEFT is able to take advantage of.
You are on Channel 6. Say something about scheduling so that people can tune in and get you when they want.
Yeah, so on Comcast Xfinity, we're available on channels 6 and 1096. They broadcast us on two channels. And then on AT&T U-verse, we're available on channel 99. And on i3 Broadband, we're available on channel 6. The majority of our cable viewers are coming in through Comcast and tune in to channel 6. As far as our schedule goes, it's kind of a mix because we are also the city's, we provide AV support for all the city's boards and commissions. So you can tune in on Monday nights and watch Urbana City Council meetings, or tune in on first and third Tuesdays of the month and watch the Board of Education, Urbana School District board meetings. And there's 14 boards and commissions that we cover every month. So you'll see a lot of board meetings on there. But we also broadcast some programming from Free Speech TV every day. So if you're not available with Free Speech TV, it's available on satellite and on Roku and devices like that, but has a wide variety of programming. Democracy Now! I think is probably one of their most popular programs. And we broadcast that live every weekday, Monday through Friday, from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. It's the news of the day. Amy Goodman hosts it and has hosted it for years. And she does a good job with that program. We also rebroadcast later in the day at 5 p.m. on most days. So you can, if you're not up early enough to catch it at 7 a.m. or if you're getting ready for work or school or things of that nature, you can also come home at 5 p.m. and watch that. And then we also run the Tom Hartman program from Free Speech TV. And that's from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. On weekdays. And outside of that, we have a wide variety of programming from our community, such as the Prairie Monk, which will run on Friday afternoons, and check our broadcast schedule for rebroadcast times on that. But it kind of runs the gamut, much as the way is when people tune into WEF, they're not quite sure at a certain time what they might hear, whether it's the Prairie Monk one, you know, Sunday, but if they tune in Monday night, it's, you know, it's WEF sessions with live local music and things of that nature that go back and forth. We have a local pro wrestling outfit, so you can tune in to pro wrestling matches on Wednesday evenings. The Champaign-Urbana Immigration Forum hosts a show every Friday evening on UPTV. We also, I mentioned that I run the cameras for WEFT WEF sessions, and that broadcasts every Friday evening and Saturday evening on UPTV. So it was really a wide variety of programming, everything from pro wrestling to music to art to board meetings and everything in between. The idea of a community access channel or radio station, and my predecessor, Jake Schumacher, always said this, is the idea is that it should be a walking mirror of the community, right? So many voices, many points of view, many different topics, and you take all of that and you put it out into the media. So when you watch UPTV or when you listen to WEFT, it should be very representative of the views and opinions and thoughts and topics and interests of Champaign-Urbana.
And much of this is put up on YouTube. So you can get it anywhere at any time.
Absolutely. So one thing that we've done through the years, I mentioned that, oh, some people are cutting the cord and they just use internet and watch their video through the internet, whether it be on Apple TV or Roku devices, or some people will just watch on their phones or the laptops. But we upload all of the city's council meetings and boards and commission meetings. Those are housed on the city website, so they can go to urbanaillinois.us and rewatch the meetings there. But then also with all of our local content, we have church sermons and we have the Prairie Monk and a number of other locally produced public access programs made by community members. We upload those to our YouTube channel, so anyone can watch those at any time they want on YouTube. And it's just youtube.com/UPTV6.
There's equipment. It seems to me that you have a fair bit of equipment in your studio, and you can have archival capacity. So you have some of these programs archived, and some of them will end up in the Urbana Free Library. But the average person doesn't necessarily have to have a lot of equipment to do this, or a lot of programming. It gets more sophisticated if you're just going to put a camera in front of someone like Monk doing Prairie Monk, then that's fairly simple and straightforward. But then you get to put in pictures. So you can select your pictures. If you have computers at home, you can do this work. You can have a Vegas program. Then it starts to get a little bit more sophisticated, because you don't exactly know where to put pictures and cut them and the like. But so the average person can probably do most of this to a certain level.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We've had a wide variety of whether they come in with already a little bit of knowledge and they're looking to produce a television show or a video, or if they're just completely, hey, I haven't picked up a video camera ever, I haven't edited on a computer ever, Jason, can you help us with this project? Teach me how to do this. And we're happy to provide that service. Many of our members now, video equipment is becoming more and more affordable as technology advances. So many of our members just send me a link every week and say, here's the next program, download this and get it on the schedule, even during normal times, non-pandemic times. And we're perfectly happy to do that. And then we have other members that come into our small studio there in the Urbana City Council chambers, and we assist them in producing television shows there. And then we also have camera equipment that we'll loan out to members, teach them how to use that, and they can go film, whether it be, a lecture on campus or a protest, out on the street, a march or rally, anything of, or a concert in one of the many venues we have around town. We loan out to do that.
We have a UPTV camera that we take out, and you have to learn how to focus in on plants, we might just put up a video clip that we have, because we're thinking that when you need sometimes to drop in a something, we might just drop in a picture of a prairie plant or a picture of a pan of a prairie, or look at perhaps even something controversial like a gate that allows us access, or we are talking about 10 mile of railroad bed between Warrantoul and Paxton on a wide roadside. So we want to encourage you to think about this and do it, because a lot of you take a lot of still photographs and video photographs, but, and it's not that much problem to put it together. I'm thinking that this sort of program could be useful in several ways. If you want to, at a later date, look for funding for this sort of programming, this sort of programming that we're doing now may be useful in the future. So sometimes the programming that you do may have several different opportunities. So the one effort that you make to record an event might have two or three different outlets or interests. And well, I think that covers what I was wanting to do. I think if we were to do video on with WEFT, it would be could be a time-consuming effort and a costly one. So I have reservations as to how much I want to encourage that, but it probably needs a specialist to be a part-time employee too. And once you get into that, you're talking about money. And the Grand Prairie Friends is using television to gather up the best part of 1,000 acres of preservation ground, so they can record bat preservation or land acquisition or maps and charts, and it is very, very helpful. So this is nationally important to do, and there is a little bit of funding for it. Not a lot, but it helps. Well, thank you, Jason, for joining me in doing that. And
absolutely.
We really appreciate your help and trying to mold us into shape to see what it is we should do appropriately. I would ask you that on our side of things, bringing pictures of a prairie to people that can't go 18 miles or more to sites, we don't exactly know what we should do. So you might say something about the difference between a PowerPoint, a blog, a slideshow. If you were talking to us as an advisor, what questions might you be asking us?
Well, I think first you want to realize who's the audience you're trying to reach, right? Many times I see organizations rush to video because it's the latest and greatest thing to put on social media. But if you're trying to reach a demographic that isn't on social media and doesn't watch video on social media, then you don't need that. Maybe they're the same demographic that would rather have a physical pamphlet flyer that they've been handing out for years and put in the door or put in mailboxes or things of that nature. And then there's others. So it really depends on who you're trying to reach, right? Because you kind of touched on it. There's so many different medias and way to get the word out to people. And if you try to touch on all of them, unless you have a lot of time or a lot of money or a lot of something, you probably won't be able to get, you know, oh, I'm going to do a radio show. Oh, I'm going to do, you know, a TV show. Oh, I'm going to do pamphlets. Oh, I'm going to do a PowerPoint. Oh, I'm going to do that. So one nice thing that we've kind of done here, Dave, over the years is at the same time you're producing a radio show on WEFT, we're also producing a TV show on UPTV. So we kind of, you know, get two tasks done in one fell swoop. But, you know, it really depends on who you're trying to reach.
Yes, the Natural Area Study Group realizes that some people have computers, but it's limited to email. So they have one person who is able to move the message to people who may have limited email or no email at all. And so, but on the other hand, you might have to communicate with an attorney that hasn't the time to go look see what you're doing. It might be a program where it's very specific, but it's a link. Tell people something about a link. What is it and how can they use it?
Yeah, so I think what you're trying to get at is whenever we put a show on YouTube, we then have a direct link to that program that when people click on it, if we were to email it to them or send it to them in a, you know, some type of message, they would be able to click on that and it takes them right to the program that we're referencing.
One of the problems with YouTube is that there are so many people accessing it and that you may not get your message, but if you send a link to a supporter, it goes to the supporter and then they can get it off YouTube.
Yeah, and that's the that's the other thing that I always tell our members is, you know, they put so much time into producing the TV show, then they just say, okay, see you later, Jason. And we're happy that they do that and we're fine with that. But if they want to get more and more viewers, I don't want to just share the video, because if I just share the video on UPTV, then okay, that's good. Everyone that's familiar with UPTV and already watching UPTV and following UPTV is seeing their message, but they should try to get, okay, I'm gonna share this to my email list, or I'm gonna tell everybody this, or I'm gonna share this on my social media, that exact link, because then you're gonna get more viewers and more people viewing your message.
So one of the things that we have to watch is that most of our visual stuff needs to be in a program. What is a blog? Does a blog allow us to include a number of video clips and stills? Tell us about a blog.
Yeah, so I'm no expert on blogs by any means, but a blog is more of a regularly published article that is more stream of conscience than you would see in a typical newspaper article or something like that. It's almost in between, an article and a journal entry, right? So most of the time blogs, if you have a blog site, you would be entering some sort of information on a regular basis, whether that be daily or monthly or weekly or something like that. To where if I had one specific topic, maybe I was really into cooking. So every, couple of days, I would put out a cooking blog of something that I just cooked in my kitchen or things of that nature. And the nice thing about blog is there aren't hard and fast rules, right? You don't have to, it has to be where you'd see in a traditional newspaper article. Oh, it has to be this many words, or it has to be this long, or we can't have that in there. We can't share video in there. You can put pictures in a blog, you can put video in a blog and embed that into your blog site, or it can just be more of an article with words. So the nice thing about a blog, and this has kind of come alive with the internet age, is that it extends the boundaries to the point where there almost are no boundaries. You can make it whatever you want. It's a creative process, right? We touched on video editing takes time. And if we want to drop in pictures of the prairie and video of the prairie and things of that nature, just like if an artist was painting a picture, there's no right or wrong way to do it, right? Because there's a little bit of an aspect of an art to it. Oh, I want to drop this in right here and I want it to move slow across and pan across the field. And then I want it to go to this, this right here. There's a little bit of an art form to it. So I don't like to say, there's a wrong or right way to do it, because it is a creative process.
And we can send you or the public, use Google Drive. And I'm having a little bit of problem with that at the moment. If I have send you a Google Drive, I have to know that you're able to receive that. If I want to go to the public, it seems like I have to share or do something different. Can you say something about the difference between a Google Drive that's very direct to one person and something that goes public? And I think it also has to do with copyright too and things like that. So a little bit of comment there would help if people are going to send you material or send their friends material.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I'm wanting to, you know, use YouTube to get this video out to the masses, right? If I'm looking to put this video out to the masses, hey, watch this video, I'm going to use YouTube or another video hosting site such as Vimeo or something along those lines. But if I'm wanting to just share how we use it, Dave, is we kind of use raw footage before we get it in a form for everyone to see, or if I'm sharing, you know, a PDF document or something like that that I don't want to attach to an email because of its large size, or even if I'm working on a Word document that I want to share around, Google Drive is an option. There's several other options out there to where it's cloud storage, basically. Anyone with a Gmail has 15 free gigabytes of Google Drive, and you can up or you can increase that amount if needed for a fee. But what you're able to do is you can upload, if you wanted to, if we were working on a document together, you can upload that document and then you can email that. It also provides you with a link that you can email to people. When you're talking about, you want to make sure that you're sending it to the right person, and this person has used Google Drive before and this person hasn't, so they might not be able to access it. It's all about the settings within Google Drive. So when you go to share that file, once you've uploaded it to Google Drive, there's a setting on there where you can make it to where people can just view it, or they have to request access to it, or they can edit it, which gives them the most control over the document that's on there. So
if they had people in a picture, they could name the people or something like that.
Yeah, so something similar like that. That's a good way to put it.
Well, I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'll be very interested to see what comes out as a web festival by remote. We've been at it. We try. And so I want to thank you, and I'm going to go to my Australian roots and tell you a little bit about the place where I grew up. So, now I think I'm on screen.
Yeah, you are, Dave. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on, and you can go forward.
Okay. One of the things that people remind you to do is to go back to your roots. So if you're a poet and you've been growing up with the seashore, it might be the seashore that's your the thing to write about. If you've grown up with eucalyptus leaves in Australia, you might find that interesting to do. So you can sometimes augment what you do by telling stories, and the stories don't have to be exactly accurate, but they give people an idea of who you are and what you are, and that is a contribution. And I think that internet has provided that stimulus for people to say who they are and to find out who you are, and to do the same with communities. For instance, if you are a traveler and you're traveling to Monticello and you want to see the Railroad Museum, you can go there, and then you have a chance to talk to the person that's driving the engine or taking the tickets, and life gets to be interesting, and we have enough time to do that sort of thing. So it has made newspapers close down, but it has allowed people to have this rather wonderful interaction. And so a lot of information that was not available to many people is now available to everyone. So if you can use it in a sophisticated manner or an unsophisticated manner, this is not just sitting around looking at television. It's thinking about how it fits into your community. What can you do? And so at the moment we're working with a Champaign, Havana, and Western Railroad that's coming into Champaign, and we really don't know where it's going to stop or where it comes, but you have that interaction with the public, and that to me is very interesting. So I'm going to go back to where I grew up and tell you a little bit about it. We we've got a few more minutes on the time clock. And I grew up on the east coast of Australia, where there's probably about 60 miles of flat land before it reaches an escarpment. And so there's a highway that goes from the railroad line being fairly instrumental in early development. When you didn't have roads, you had railroads. And it's over the coastal plain, so it's very damp and swampy in places. So you have to have railroads that are have good ballast. And there's a lot of research to that. You have to know how the ballast gravel sits in with each other. And it's very important because most railroads ran on stick rail. So it's very easy for a heavy steam engine to push one rail down and hit the next rail at the end and crack it. And I can remember near our location, there were 65 broken rails between about the best part of 100 miles. You also have to know how to burrow through hills, because sometimes that open plain, coastal plain, is replaced by outliers of this escarpment, which go right out to the ocean. So you have no alternative but to go through the mountain, and sometimes it can be considerable. So you have to know a little bit about railroading, and then there's a road that goes from that railroad west from the Pacific Ocean over the flatland up the escarpment. And in our case, the escarpment was about 2,000 feet. Our little town was right there at the bottom. And when you went up the hill, it was steep grades and sharp curves for 7 miles. And yes, you then got to the escarpment top, and it was very windy. But the soil was rich, because when you have an escarpment, it's land movement, and it ends up with little volcanoes here and there. So all up this east side of Australia, there's a mountain range, which is part of plate tectonics, and rich soil coming up with basaltic type volcanic material that weathers and becomes very rich. So when we were down on the lower part of the in front of the escarpment, our soils were not awfully good. They were part of shales and slates and sandstones, limestones that were water worn, and so the secondary hills were not very rich and sort of reserved for livestock. The river that ran along in the front of this escarpment and then ducked out into the ocean benefited from the fact that some of the rich volcanic soils eroded, and little streams came down the hill, and you had river flatlands, and you had river levees. I don't know all the geography, but it seemed to me that at different times in the continental mass, the river ran at several different levels. So you have levees, and if I were to walk to the farmer across the other side of the river, I would go across a little bit of flatland, then up on the one levee, and then a little bit of flatland, and up on another levee. So those areas often receive some rich materials. It's good for small agriculture. And this river went from a post office at the bottom of the escarpment, probably about 25 or 26 miles along the escarpment. And the forests that grew on that area were fairly available to rich leaching from the escarpment above. So you would have tall eucalypt trees and a sclerophyll forest. A sclerophyll means the leaves of these eucalypts have they're shining on both sides, not like the leaf that you often look at on a broadleaf, which has a shining side up and a dull side down. They're used to droughts and adapt. So if my brother and I rode a bicycle to the end of the corridor, you would find only a little stream and tall eucalypts and a cacophony of sound, because the parrots and birds that found their way into the canopy above you were communicating in a tremendous noise. If we lose those sorts of forests, we lose a lot of our biodiversity. Unfortunately, Australia has recently been subject to lightning strikes and fires. The lightning strikes are unfortunate if you're a settlement person, but they're a part of nature, and the plants and trees have adapted themselves to being struck by lightning. They have adventitious buds, so that a few weeks after a fire, then the forest is coming back to green. You can tell where the trees burn and sometimes fallen over, but it's alive and well. If that firing happens intermittently, it's good. If it happens to have been protected by non-burning for years because people just didn't like to have fires, they put them out as soon as they happened, and they had areas where there was surveillance, so that if a fire started, you were right on top of it, and you might have a helicopter or a truck to put it out, and you'd have roads around the forest. It's increasingly becoming realized that sort of maintenance is not good for forest ecology. It needs to be burned, because for thousands, perhaps even millions of years, it's been used to that sort of paradigm. And to close it off, it means that accumulated litter gets down in the ground. And once you get that, and you get a really serious fire, and it gets into the canopy, you more or less kill that eucalypt, even if it had an adventitious buds to come out. So Australia is facing some of that at this time, because they've had exceptionally dry period and the accumulation of litter. The trees usually don't exfoliate on a seasonal basis. They exfoliate constantly. And my parents had were settling on a plot of land on the lower part of the escarpment, and they faced a fire. May have been lit by carelessness, but most often it's lit by lightning. And so they lost their little house, and I lost a lot of my records. And it's serious stuff. If you're going to enjoy building into the woodlands, you better be careful if you order to have a city council or others that are aware that every once in a while you have to get out there and do some burning if you're going to control the situation. It's otherwise, you just might have leaves in your gutters, and very shortly you'll have thermals from a fire having lifted up a bark that's burning, and it can travel slowly on the air currents, and perhaps 3 miles away it can fall on your house, and you wonder why that happened. But it's understood, and somehow we have to live with nature. So that's, I grew up with that sort of forest and little farms. So if I go from the post office, there was a post office called Sora, It was named after one of the local citizens because it used to be Never Never, and they thought that was too outrageous. So it was renamed Thora, which was a name for the period. And then you take off on a little dirt road, and there's a public hall. The public hall is in a commons and subject to some of this sort of fire. You have to be careful. And if there's also people who like to light fires to make a small pit for their cattle. That means that sometimes the plants that like to be fired get to be too dominant, and sometimes there are plants that do fire. So sometimes if you have lady grass, it will be tall and burnable. And if you're managing that sort of territory, whether it's a vacant lot or a hill, Tipperary was our hill, which would kind of suggest that the Irish settled there. But the river bends around hills like Tipperary, and gradually you have bridges that cross every so often, because you have to go from flatland to flatland. When a river meanders, it cuts in on one side and drops on the other, makes a beach on the other. And so there are places where you can have bridges that cross. There are probably best part of 20 or 30 bridges between the post office at Thora. It went to Rama and Darkville, and the plots of land got smaller, and the bridges got to be smaller. At the upper end of the river, you would have suspension bridges who held up by cables, and so you could walk across, but you would have to also tunnel your cream across, because that was the product that you sold with cattle and dairy farming. You'd have to have your cream to a box where the cream lorry or the cream cart would pick up your cream and take it to a butter factory, and the butter would be made, and it was high in salt because that helped to preserve it, and that went off to England, firstly in a windjammer, but then in steamers. But it was a long trip, and so England was our motherland, and we had two butter factories that did just that. We also had a shipbuilding place where coastal ships were made. I'm going back to the post office, which was also the provider of gasoline, called petrol. You had to pump your petrol up into a viewing glass, which if you wanted 4 gallons, you pumped up to 4 gallons, and then you let it run in by gravity. We didn't have electricity. We had a post outside which was going to be rural electricity, but it was there for years and didn't come. So some people had their own generators, but mostly people lived without electricity. We would, at dark, Father would go around and light a lamp in each bedroom or lounge room. And some of those lights were Coleman lights that were running on gas, but much brighter. And you could take your light out and into the back lawn or into the bush. It was just a wonderful way to grow up, and I remember it. I mean, my father was a school teacher. We had a school playground, and we played marbles. I just go back and remember doing the things we did, and we had up to about 8 cows, and they were all pets. And we had chickens, and some of them were pets. We brought in a cockerel, a Rhode Island Red Rooster, and my, he was going to protect all his flock. But we also had goannas, which would come in and eat eggs. And if you ever watched a goanna eat a leg with a forky tongue, it could lick out all the yolk. And just, we grew up with these things, hawks and eagles and native creatures and rainforest that was really rather wonderful. And being like the Amazon, being exterminated even while we grew up. We used to timber jinkas that were taking out logs, sometimes 3 feet across that you'd never get again. And often there's certain logs that were good for coach making and shipbuilding were taken out and the rest were burned. And it's a colonialism. It went on all around the world, but it's sort of got to come to a cease because we just can't lose our biodiversity and we can't just keep having more and more people and overpopulating the world with one species. And we have to think about things like climate change. I wonder what will happen to our little village as the climate goes up. Every once in a while we'd have some snow on top of the mountain, but mostly without it. That sort of thing. And so if it changes, we will not have any snow. And the species may change. Warm species will probably come in from the south probably come back from the north. But I think that might be enough because I think we're getting near enough. I want to leave some space for WEFT to do its thing and really appreciate WEFT and Havana Public Television to allow us to do what we do. And we've been pleased to encourage a little bit of prairie preservation, which is very, very minor. So think about all these things and enjoy what you're doing and have a sort of mission. It's something that you enjoy doing and you do well. It doesn't have to be big. It just is your character, and we enjoy what you do. This is Dave Monk, the Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial, and I will talk to you again. Bye.
Coming to you here on WEFT Champaign, as well as WEFT.org.
This hour of programming is brought to you by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts and the listeners of WEFT. Krannert Center for the Performing Arts has announced the cancellation of all fall public in-person performances. Krannert Center thanks you for your steadfast support and invites you to visit krannertcenter.com for updates on virtual programming and other news.
One of the things that I noticed on the WEFT website is that they have this statement. The National Federation of Community Broadcasters maintains that fairness and justice depend on acknowledging social and historical context. NFCB stands allied with the movement for Black Lives. We believe the voices of Black, Indigenous, and people of color must be heard. We are here, ready to listen and support.
Hi, Champaign County's own native child, Tom Baudette here, for the American value of wearing pants in public. Well, not just pants, but face coverings, too. You might have heard there's a pandemic going around. It's on a hard upswing in Champaign County again, and even healthy-looking people can spread it. Pretty people, ugly people, anyone. So for your friends and neighbors, remember to keep your distance from others. Wear a mask when you go out. And don't forget your pants, either. Police are real sticklers on that.
WEFT is currently offering our listeners the rare opportunity to purchase a newly created WEFT t-shirt. The t-shirt comes in four different colors, red, blue, green, or purple, with a WEFT design on the front and our program schedule on the back. Sizes medium through extra large are $20. Double extra large is slightly more at $22. Shipping is free. Limited numbers of shirts are available and popular sizes are available, so don't wait long. Please visit weft.org to view the t-shirt design and for ordering information.
This is WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to a pre-recorded show of Shruti, music from the Indian subcontinent.